It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
All right. I'm opening this up a little bit differently than I was originally going to because I saw somebody in the chatty house mentioned that the Kings are 1.5-point favorites tonight against the Houston Rockets.
Erroneous.
So here's as a longtime loser of sports wagers, let me tell you something. I have deep concerns about the Kings going into tonight, and we'll talk about it.
Okay.
But on the other hand, when I see a line, a betting line, a point spread, if you will, of the Kings favored by 1.5 against the Houston Rockets, who are terrorizing the league right now and are half a game out of the number one seed in the Western Conference, that sends up, that piques my interest. Not because I'm going, hey, I'm betting the house on the Rockets. I'm not going to do that because that's, you know what? That's how these books make money.
Okay.
Is by people like me who have done this time and time again, even though I know not to, I will go, what? The Rockets are going to win by 50. What are we doing here? Give me the Rockets and the 1.5. I'll tease that down and I'll go Rocket. Give me the Rockets minus 10. Like what odds can I get on that? Right. That's what they want you to do. That's how they win your money.
So you're thinking people
sucker lines. That's what this is, dude. There are people who are going to look and go, wait, the Kings? They fell 7 of their last 9. The Rockets? They're cruising right now. What?
They've won 3 in a row, 5 of their last 6, 10 of their last 12.
They beat the Thunder in there. They are rolling.
The Clippers twice.
Then they go, oh, the Kings minus 1. Oh, give me the Rockets plus 1.5. Bet the house.
Oof.
And that's how you lose your house. That's what they want you to do. They want you to take that Rockets plus 1.5. They're dangling out there for you. Don't do it. That's why I'm leaning Kings tonight, because of that betting line.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
You're not saying this on the radio and then going the other direction.
No, because I can't do that.
Yeah, because
I'll put a Prize Picks entry in for sure. I'll put a Prize Picks lineup in, but I can't. You can't do because
it's
not
betting in California.
Yeah, it's not betting. It's daily fantasy.
Of course.
If you are listening in a place, because of course we are on YouTube and Twitch and on the free Odyssey app and online at ESPN1320.com. So we have listeners worldwide. If wagering is legal where you are, I would lean towards the Kings minus 1.5.
Huh. I mean, the Kings are 4-7 at home.
They do have 4 home wins.
I don't know what to say here, Kyle.
Dude, it's...
I think you're reverse jinxing this thing.
No, I'm not. We'll get to the Kings losing aspect of this in a second, because I don't think they're going to win tonight. But on the other hand, when I see, because they don't make bad lines very often, sports books, and they make the lines to try and earn money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they make the lines to try and get 50% of wagers on both sides. But that to me is a sucker line. And that makes me feel a little bit better about the Kings tonight. I know that's silly. I know it's irrational. I know there are people who don't do sports betting who are like, what the hell is this guy talking about? But I promise you it's a thing.
I'm a person who at one time did do sports betting, and I'm looking at you like, what the hell are you talking about?
I kind of want to hit up one of my friends who is like a professional sports bettor. Like, that's what he does.
Yeah.
He has a group of people who have sources and insight, and they, like, you want to talk, when you hear about like these massive wagers that come in on these sports books, it's like groups like this.
Oh.
And he's part of one of those. I want to hit him up and ask, like, hey, is this weird? This is weird, right? Because it is. The Rockets, the Kings, don't match up with the Rockets. We talk about the Kings, man, they need size, they need athleticism. That is just the Rockets. That's all they have, is size and athleticism.
Well, that, and the Kings were 0-3 against them last year.
And got kind of mollywopped a couple times.
When they weren't a good team then.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, I get it. I get why this sounds insane. I get that there are people who are going, wait, I do betting. Give me the Rockets plus 1.5. I think they're going to win by 15.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take the one. Yeah, give me the extra point. I'm just saying. It's funky to me. Is that not funky that the Kings are favored tonight?
It's very strange.
If you had said, hey, what's the line on that? I'd have been like, yeah, Rockets minus 3.5. Rockets minus 4.
I would have said more like Rockets minus 6.
You got to factor in that they're at home. One. But yeah, so.
But you factor that they're 4-7 at home.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You factor that in. Like, you got me, man. I'm confused.
I am super confused. As well. But here's where I'm at. Again, setting the betting thing aside, let's talk some Kings basketball. We also had an insane Monday Night Football game last night that we'll talk about, and some really rough injury news for the 49ers that we will get to as their nightmare season continues. But I'm deeply concerned about the Kings tonight. Putting the betting line aside.
Mm-hmm.
Because this feels like a spot where they could lose by a bunch. And I cannot help but have in the back of my mind the 2014-15 season when Michael Malone was 11-13 after 24 games. And very clearly from anybody who followed the team even a little bit, oh, this is the best coach they've had in, oh, I don't know, 10 years. And they got rid of him because he was 11-13. And if the Kings lose tonight, they fall to 9-13. And we already know that there was, from the coaching staff to the front office to and beyond, displeasure with how the season ended last year.
Uh-huh.
And I can't imagine that given the falling short last year into a stretch of, what would it be, 3 consecutive losses and 8 of their last 10 to fall to 9-13. Meanwhile, the Rockets, who have now surpassed the Kings to me, and we'll talk about that coming up in a bit. I think the Rockets have passed the Kings. Oklahoma City has passed the Kings. The Warriors are playing really well. They're just down the road. They have managed to figure it out and get to whatever they are, 12-7 now, 12-8.
Mm-hmm.
I am deeply concerned that if the Kings lose this game tonight and lose by a lot, that we could see some knee-jerk reactions from the front office, ownership, whatever it is.
Yeah, I think we are I'm not positive that we're at the precipice of disaster, but I think we're very close to that. Like, I've done this so many times, and, you know, like, I've talked about this so many times. My first 12 seasons covering the team, 9 head coaches. And, like, you get a feel for when things have gone south. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'm all the way there right now. You know, I thought yesterday going to practice, it was like a pretty light mood. And Mike Brown was funny and, like, used me as a practice dummy to...
That was so funny.
...show how to set a screen. Of course, I didn't record any of it because my phone ran out of batteries after.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I was just like right, a you practice
got, we
dummy.
We got good angles from everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's why I didn't
Salute
have a phone.
To, was it Sean Cunningham who had the really good angle?
I think it's either that or it was Matt George had a good angle.
Oh, it might have been Matt. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So look, I think that it was a light mood yesterday. I think we got really good content out of the players that we talked to. And I don't feel like this team is like careening towards the Grand Canyon and, you know, like Thelma and Louise in this thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like that there is a possibility for a turnaround here. I would just point that like one of the more disturbing things is that if we looked at all of the stretches in this season and we looked at the last 7 games and thought you're going to play the Hawks, the Clippers, the Nets, OKC, the Timberwolves, the Trailblazers, and the Spurs. I think anyone who walked into the season believing that this Kings team was a playoff team and a 50-win team saw this as a 5-2 stretch. At a minimum.
Bro, after their 15th game where they were the 8-7 after 15.
Yeah.
We looked at this stretch. Man, Clippers, Nets, Thunder, Wolves, Blazers, Spurs. That's a chance to prove that you belong in that playoff conversation, to get a few games above 500.
Yeah.
And they've lost virtually all of them.
It's one of the most bizarre things that I've seen from this team. Like, I've covered a lot of bad basketball here.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of teams that just didn't have the talent to compete.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the organization and the structure to compete, and they were going to lose. They also had things like the lowest payroll in the NBA. All of these things that you keep thinking about, like, when you're covering a team, like, oh, this thing is going to last, like, you know, the good vibes can last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, like hope springs eternal walking into a season. But you know by like November, mid-November, this thing's done.
Yeah.
And you're just watching the thing unwind, right? That's not what I expected from this season at all.
Mm-mm.
Even last season, I didn't expect the overall vibe and just sort of the lack of traction that they were able to gain.
Mm-hmm.
This season just feels so strange to look at the games that they've lost, to realize that they are exactly the same team they were last year at the start of the season, just a little worse.
Yeah, and that's I think why this is so worrying is A, this is not the 2014 Kings.
No.
Right? This is a group that, man, you expected them to be a lot better. Not in, oh, fingers crossed that I don't know. I know this is too far back, but like Ray McCallum works out. Like, it's not that.
Yeah.
It's like, this is good players. We've seen these be good NBA players now. Now they're dealing with some injury stuff, and I know that matters, but the start of this year, we talked about last year, they won 46 games, but did they really take a step back? Because it was only two fewer wins. Monk got hurt. Herter got hurt. They dropped a couple of games that they probably shouldn't have. Okay, but didn't take a huge step back. It was more like a lateral step. And then you go into this year, and the start of this year makes last year look like a step back.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's now continued going the wrong direction. And that's why I'm worried about this on a bigger picture scale.
Mm-hmm.
Because the start of this year justifies any consternation about the way last year went. And if you're now losing to the Rockets, who again were a team who was behind you last year, the Rockets didn't even Rockets didn't make a play in.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And now they're fighting for the number one seed in the West, a West that everybody agrees is good.
Oh, and they're an offensive juggernaut.
And a defensive juggernaut.
Yeah. They are a very, very well coached team.
Yes.
And they're very deep.
And that's why I go into tonight, like, man, I am worried about overreaction because I can't get that. I thought it was gone based on how the first Beam Team year went. Last year, not great, but you know what? Some stability. Didn't love how the Mike Brown contract thing went, but you know what? They extend him. Okay, stability, we're good. But then that thing in the back of my mind of being around the Kings and following the Kings since 2011 when I got into this market, that thing in the back of my mind that's there of like, oh, are they gonna like horribly botch this?
Yeah.
Are they gonna mess up a thing that was, are they gonna do the wrong thing trying to fix this thing? Because it's not perfect. Like, I don't think anybody's gonna look at the Kings this year and go, oh yeah, everything's great. It's imperfect, but I don't think they're that far away.
No,
I think they're going to make it. I'm worried that they're going to make some kind of change that is more akin to a team that's further away than the Kings are.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you're worried about, like the irrevocable like move that like once it happens, it sets off a chain reaction.
Yes.
Like I talked about this on D'Lo and Casey yesterday a little bit in the afternoon. Firing a coach and bringing in an intern coach, it's never worked.
That for the most part means your season's over.
No, it does, but that's the problem. Most owners, when they make this move right now, they don't see it that way. They don't, even though the same owner that's here right now fired Michael Malone after that 10-13 start, right? And then brought in Ty Corbin. Let Ty Corbin take over the team. Ty Corbin was a lead assistant, but he had just been hired during the offseason. Like, Ty Corbin went 7-21. And then George Karl took over, and you had three coaches in 1 year. And that wasn't the answer. So, like, look, I think that's what we're looking at is a situation where step back. Like, take stock in what you have and where you're at. Can you improve the roster? Can you fill some of the gaps that are missing in this roster? And can you move forward? Because when you hit that button and then it doesn't go right, that means that it all goes wrong. That means that if you had a general manager who worked out a contract extension for a head coach during the offseason, and then they have to pay out that contract extension for the next 2 years after this,
yep.
and then you go on to win 28 games or something, just like note to self, the general manager doesn't survive that either. Like the last ditch effort is like always to fire the coach and push blame one way or another. That's the beginning of the end. And then you really have to start worrying about De'Aaron Fox's contract extension next summer.
Yes. Like there's dominoes to this.
Yeah. Like where does this go? It's tough.
I did some math.
Okay.
So since Paul Westfall was fired in the 2011-12 season after 7 games, he went 2-5.
Yep.
Kings interim coaches, including Ty Corbin, George Karl, Keith Smart, and Alvin Gentry, not in that order, are 62-120.
60,
that is a 340 winning percentage. It is 28 games, the exact number you said. That is what they average over an 82-game season.
Well, that, and I can tell you that Keith Smart was given the head coaching job moving forward. He wasn't an interim. He was given the head coaching job for that season and the next, and he had another year left on his deal, or maybe he did not have another year left on his deal, but he was going to hopefully be there, and then the ownership change happened, and they just let him go.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrone Corbin was given, not an interim tag, a full contract by Pete D'Alessandro, a 2-year deal, and so they paid him for another year after he was gone, except for he was a roving scout or... front office.
I would love to be a roving scout.
Okay.
Roving scout means I hang out at my house.
Yeah, but we're not done because.
Oh, okay, perfect.
George Karl was also given a 3-year deal. He was not an interim. He was given a 3-year deal. And so they were paying Michael Malone, Tyrone Corbin. And when George Karl only lasted a year, he still had 2 years left on his deal. So I would like to call these guys interim head coaches. None of them were interim head coaches except for Alvin Gentry.
Wow.
And we can keep going back. You can go look at how many times Jerry Reynolds took over a team.
How should I frame that statistic? Coaches
that took over mid-season.
That took over mid-season. There we go. Okay, yeah. not necessarily interim coaches.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what that's why there's this urgency now for me, because this isn't a team that is bad, and it's like, man, you know what? Hey, clean house.
No. Like,
but when you hit that red button, it is domino number one.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a stack of dominoes that you can't get going back the other direction.
No.
And if I would tell you, dude, if I thought, you know what, this team needs a coaching change, I'd be there. I would say it.
Mm-hmm.
I would come out and say, yeah, you know what? Hey, I don't think Mike Brown's a guy. They need to push that red button because they're going to spiral and this is going to go the wrong way. But to me, there are so many other issues with the Kings right now,
mm-hmm.
where we've talked about the roster building. They've had some injury stuff. They've had some regression from players. And if you want to put that on the coaching staff, all right, like that's okay. I don't. I worry. I am very concerned for this iteration of Kings basketball that 2 years ago looked like they were a team on the rise, and we are now sitting here in 21 games into the 24-25 season wondering if, oh, hey, we're going to get a repeat of what the Kings have always been.
Yeah.
And that sucks. And I really hope it doesn't go that way.
No, I do too. Like, I was hoping for like a stretch of 6 to 7 years here of really good basketball. And look, we might still get it. Like, we might. Like, there's always a possibility that they figure this thing out, that they make a tweak or two to the lineup, the roster right now. They bring in some guys. There's a possibility that this isn't a 32-33 win season.
Mm-hmm.
But you're sitting on, like, the precipice. And, Kyle, what I think, like, last season, we can just, like right off the top of my head, I do it all the time, I talk about the Hornets game, the Pistons game, the Blazers game, the Wizards game. 4 games,
I mean,
that just stood out that were like, you can't lose those games. And then we have this whole other grouping of games, these other 5 games that the Kings specifically lost because they missed free throws in the final minute.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, the Bucks game, there's other games.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't even need to try to give you like 4 games that stand out. I'm looking at the schedule right now and like what's already happened, and you shouldn't have lost a Toronto game. I don't care about the travel. You shouldn't have lost a Toronto game.
I agree.
You shouldn't have lost the first Spurs game.
Yep.
You shouldn't have lost the Atlanta Hawks game. You shouldn't have lost the Nets game. You shouldn't have lost the Trailblazers or the Spurs game this last week.
Mm-hmm.
we're already at like 5 or 6 games that you're like, you miss the playoffs at the end of the season when the 82 game is tallied.
It's a continuation of all the worst trends from last year.
Yes. All of the worst trends are there.
And I get that there are some people who are going to go, and I see in the chatty house, I hear you yelling at your radio.
Mm-hmm.
There are people going, right, that's the coaching. Attitude reflects leadership. Shout out to Remember the Titans. I understand that. And I understand that thought process. The problem for me is I think their problems are personnel related. Their larger, kind of bigger problems are personnel related.
Mm-hmm.
And they added DeMar DeRozan, but they didn't do anything to fix their problems with length and athleticism on the perimeter.
No, it was DeMar DeRozan and the same 7 guys.
Yeah, and that's nice. Like they put the ball in the hoop better for sure. But I've not watched the Kings really at all this year, save for Keegan Murray and Kevin Huerter having their shooting struggles and gone, wow, this offense just not working.
Mm-hmm.
They're scoring points. They're putting the ball in the hoop. They just can't get stops.
Yeah. Well, specifically, they can't get stops from behind the arc.
Yeah, and there's only so many adjustments you can make scheme-wise before you go, hey, they just don't have the players to do this. And,
well, that's where it's like the chicken or the egg, because it's like, okay, you understand who your players are. Now you have to coach to the strengths of your players.
That's true.
You gotta figure it all out, to be fair. So, but I'm just going to lump, like, coach, general manager, all these guys in the same bucket at this point.
Yeah.
You all have to figure it out. You all have to get on the same page, and you got to figure it out, because the big red button that's staring you in the face that we all know is like someone wants to just...
Someone's itching to hit it.
He wants to hit that button like lighting the beam, you know, like it's sitting right there, just wants to put his hand on it and smack that button. That is such a destructive button in this moment.
Yep.
And it means chaos.
Yep.
And chaos over 2, maybe 5 years, because the domino effect, it could keep going and going and going.
Yeah.
And we're already seeing ticket prices are high, 1,000 empty seats every night, sometimes 2,000 empty seats every night. Like, you're looking at, like, this is, it encompasses everything, Kyle. The business side, the basketball side, the coaching side, the general manager side, all of it. And that's where it's like, don't make a knee-jerk reaction after one, what we expect to be, like tonight. I have a tough time believing the Kings are going to beat the Rockets. And it's not because I think the Kings are horrible. It's because I think the Rockets are a better team right now. And I think they're a really bad matchup. Mm-hmm. And they have every single one of those things that we keep telling everyone that the Kings need. They have like 6 of them.
Yeah.
Like they have
the
waves
Rockets
of
them. Are really a well-built roster.
Yes, like Jabari Smith Jr., long, athletic. Asura Thompson, long and athletic. Tara Eason, long and athletic.
Dylan Brooks.
Like, just keep going down the list. I mean, Cam Whitmore can't even get on the court. He's down in the G League.
Cam Whitmore would start for the Kings.
Or play 25 minutes. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, tough.
All right, we'll dive into that game. We'll dive into the matchup. How did the Rockets get ahead of the Kings? I want to dissect that a little bit with you. Let's get to our Jiffy Lube teamwork plays of the game from over the weekend, because we were holding out on this, hoping that we would have sweatshirts to give away, which we now do.
Oh, we do.
A big shout out to our guy Jim with Brickhouse Industries for coming through, and a big shout out to Jiffy Lube as well, because they are going to hook you up this month with this sick Insiders hoodie. I don't know. I don't have the stream up. Is this the right spot?
Yeah.
We have this in a good place.
Yes.
Where everybody can see it.
Uh-huh.
We have them in black. We have them in red. We have them in blue. We're giving those away as part of our Jiffy Lube teamwork play of the day giveaway throughout this month.
Yep.
We'll give you a word throughout the week. And then on Fridays, we will give away a $50 Jiffy Lube gift certificate and a Kings an Insiders hoodie.
That's right.
So after each Kings game, make sure to tap into the Insiders, and we will give you a keyword. So here's the two from over the weekend. I'm just gonna give them both to you right now. The whole point of having two is getting you to listen, and you know, oh, you gotta wait around. No. I'm not gonna make you do that today. You're welcome.
Especially since we forgot to give you the
keywords
yesterday.
We didn't forget. We were waiting on the hoodies.
Okay.
The two words, you're going to enter them at ESPN1320.com. The contest page is front and center, courtesy of our friends at Jiffy Lube. The first word from the Friday game against the Blazers is thud. T THUD thud, because that is how that game felt. You needed to go in and you needed to blow the Blazers out and you face planted. That's tough. We had a really hard time coming up for a word from the Spurs game.
Mm.
So we went with the guy who had a 34, 14, 11, and 3 blocks triple-double, Wemby. W-E-M-B-Y, Wemby, is your second word. So go to ESPN1320.com, enter each of the words individually. Don't enter them at the same time. That'd be insane. Enter twice. Give yourself two chances to win a $50 Jiffy Lube gift certificate just ahead of the holiday driving season. Going to want to get your car. Going to want to get that oil changed. Headlights. You're going to want to get wiper blades. Your battery.
Oh, yeah.
Do all that for you. Do that before the holiday travel season begins. At JiffyLube.com. Find the location nearest you. Yeah. $50 Jiffy Lube gift certificate and a hoodie of your choice. Black, red, or blue.
That's right.
An insider's hoodie. Exclusive, by the way. You can't buy these. You can get these via giveaway only.
That's right. Well, that ain't. Go to JiffyLube.com to get a $33 off coupon.
Do that for sure.
Yeah, for your oil change. Good stuff.
All right. Wild Monday Night Football game last night, by the way. Jameis Winston.
It's just wild.
He is the most entertaining player in the league.
Wait, did you? He had 400...
I couldn't look away. I don't give a rip about the Browns or the Broncos. Couldn't care less. Couldn't look away from the game last night. Because you might see a pick six. You might see a 78-yard touchdown. Doesn't matter.
The stat was something crazy, like he threw for 497 yards.
Which is and nuts in itself.
And then he had like 179 yards and return yards against him on his INTs.
He threw two pick sixes. And then after the game, he said, I pray the Lord delivers me from pick sixes.
Well, he does a lot of praying to the Lord. That's every time
he does,
I see him.
Man. He's...
God bless his heart.
He is the player he is at this point. He might win you a couple games. And he's going to lose you more. But man, is it fun to watch. Even with like a minute left, after his second pick six that put the Broncos up 9 with, I think it was is a little over a minute left. It's like, I got to stick around. A, he might throw another one. He might throw a long touchdown and we got a game.
I am here for him to be the Raiders quarterback next season.
And then he gets him into the red zone where, okay, hey, you get a touchdown and get the onside kick. Nope, interception. The worst one of the night, by the way. I don't know what he was doing.
I never know what he's doing.
Never change, Jameis, please. You were the most entertaining player in football. All right. We might talk a little more about that game, but we got Kings Rockets tonight. We'll dive into the matchup for you. We will have some 49ers injury updates, and the funniest suspension in NFL history happened today. We'll get into that as well on the Insiders. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We are sponsored by Jiffy Lube, and this is ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. James Hamm there. James Hamm there. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube sponsors the program, and we have a Kings Rockets showdown tonight. You know, we've discussed before just where the Rockets have kind of surpassed the Kings here in the West hierarchy over the last couple of seasons. They had not done so last year, but with their kind of meteoric rise this year,
mm-hmm.
With the Kings struggling, the Rockets come into tonight's game at 15-6, winners of 3 in a row and 5 of their last 6, and what 10 of 12?
10 of 12.
And they're rolling right now. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. the Kings are lost 7 of their last 9. They've lost 2 in a row, and they're struggling. And it's hard to compare them because they were built so differently. Like, the Kings had a star in De'Aaron Fox and were struggling to build around him until they traded for Domantas Sabonis, and then they drafted Keegan Murray number 4 overall,
mm-hmm.
and then had that kind of foundation to kind of build around. You bring in Kevin Huerter, you bring in Trey Lyles, you sign Malik Monk and have the Malik Monk signing workout, and that was kind of how they rapidly built this contender. Meanwhile, the Rockets, it's not super complicated. They just hit some draft picks.
Oh, they stripped it down, got as many picks as possible, yep, and then just hit one after another.
Jalen Green, number 2 overall in the 2021 draft. Jabari Smith, number 3 overall in the 2022 draft. Amen Thompson, number 4 overall in the 2023 draft. They also wound up with Alperen Şengün, the 16th pick of the 2021 draft. And then Tari Eason, who is the 17th pick in the 2022 draft.
Yep. And Cam Whitmore is what, number 21, 22 overall in the 2023 draft?
Yeah, and Reed Sheppard doesn't play a ton, but was awesome in the preseason.
Yeah.
And Summer League, for whatever that's worth, which is not a whole heck of a lot. Like, Jayshon Tate's a good player who doesn't really...
Well, and Reed Sheppard was what?
Jayshon Tate was undrafted.
Fourth pick in the draft?
Who?
Reed Sheppard. Third overall pick.
Yeah, Cam Whitmore, 20th pick in 2023.
Yeah, the entire team is
insane.
They have like a bunch of top tier.
Yeah.
And they really hit with Alperen Şengün. That's the one that they've hit out of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
The other guys are still developing and they're still good young players.
Mm-hmm.
They just haven't reached any height that you thought that they would reach yet.
And I think it's kind of interesting because we say they have all these players that fit the mold of the players the Kings kind of need.
Mm-hmm.
But this is why the different builds, this is where the different builds come into play. Because the Kings have needed to, they went 0 to 100 like that, right? They went not a playoff team to 48 wins in the number 3 seed.
They jumped from 30 to 48, 18 game
yes.
jump. Yep.
They didn't have the margin for error. Or they didn't have the ramp up to take flyers on 6'7", 6'6", 6'11", guys who could just go play. Like, hey, you can go figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Green has not been awesome his entire career, but he's gotten to play a ton.
Yeah.
He's gotten to go figure it out. And that's been the difference. And I think the reason we've seen such a quick turnaround is they went out and went, okay, we've got all these cheap young players. Let's go get Fred VanVleet. Might overpay him a little bit, but he's going to be a great leader.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go get a Jeff Green. Let's go get a Dylan Brooks. A little reclamation project. Let's bring in Dylan Brooks and see if we can't establish that kind of defensive-minded culture, which is what they've done.
Yeah, even Steven Adams. They brought in Steven Adams.
Another great one.
He doesn't play a ton, but if you look at the way that they're built, they've got just a very, very good mix of teachers
mm-hmm.
to go with students.
Yep.
And so you're having a bunch of young players learn how to play and grow together. That's, I think this is a scary team. They took sort of the jump, the same jump that we saw from the Thunder last year. The Thunder went from like a really fun young team to, oh my gosh, they're really good. And now, oh my gosh, they might be, you know,
yeah,
the team that will represent the Western Conference in the finals. They did that in 2 years. But you see the Rockets taking the same type of jump
mm-hmm.
where they got right up to like the 10 seed, the 11 seed, right around there. And then, boom, they're ready to roll. So I think we're seeing a new trend with younger teams that are being able to develop quicker. And I'm not sure why that is.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly know this doesn't usually work. When you have this many young players at one time, it doesn't usually work. And the only way it does is if you have a really, really strong structure in place.
Yep.
And so shout out to, what, Dagnall, and shout out to Emi Udoka here
yeah.
that has done a really good job of reining these guys in, holding them accountable, like developing a giant group of young players. It's just such a different type of feel than what you do in Sacramento where, you know, you had a 24, 25-year-old Fox and then you started adding all these pieces around his age
mm-hmm.
To try to build this thing out. And it's just two different types of build.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we all expected the Kings to be a team that was able to build off of 48 and get to 50-something and
yes.
then get to, you know, closer to 60, closer to the high 50s in, mm-hmm. in year 3, which is this year. And instead of doing that, they've lost their way a little bit, which
yeah.
is weird because this isn't a young team. It's
yeah.
a veteran-laden team at this point, and you're like, what's wrong?
But I think that's what makes it difficult to add. Like, we've talked for 3 years now. Well, you and I have talked for the last year and a half. Like, man, they need everything the Rockets have. Size, athleticism.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is veteran players who are legitimate athletic 3-and-D wings don't just, like, come available.
No.
Those are usually players the teams are going to covet. And to go get one via the draft, like, it's that's it becomes harder to do when you can't take a flyer on a guy. When you can't go, who's the guy that went to the Pistons? Ron Holland?
Yeah.
You can't take a flyer on Ron Holland because you're like, man, he's 19. We don't know how he's going to develop. Don't really have time to let him develop. Mm-hmm. So it's got to be Devin Carter, who played for multiple years in college and is 22 years old, and we think he's more NBA ready now, where you might be limiting your ceiling, and you're like, the needle you're trying to thread is just so much thinner because you're trying to add assets like via the draft or via undrafted free agency or via trade that are not super easy to go find.
Well, that, and Kyle, I think when you're drafting at number 12, 13, 14, and you're a good team that for some reason has your pick, like mm-hmm. you fell apart at the end of the season, you somehow have your pick, you're still looking for a more seasoned veteran player that fits into the anywhere between 1 and 8 in your rotation. You don't mm-hmm. care. Maybe 1 and 9. Like, right. It's okay. As long as they're a rotational player, we're okay. Mm-hmm. When you're drafting in the top 5, it's like, okay, I need a franchise-altering guy. I need this guy to be excellent. I need him to be mm-hmm. somebody that we're going to build around for the next 10 years, mm-hmm. right? And so your approach is different, but also I think the Kings just naturally gravitate towards more mature college players. That's what the front office, the current front office sure. does. I've talked about this. The only guy they've ever drafted that was young, like a 18, 19-year-old, was Jamias Ramsey. Outside mm-hmm. of that, everyone else is a junior, senior in college or a really old sophomore.
And I get why, I think it limits them. If you're not going to go take a flyer on a Cam Whitmore because you go, yeah, no, I don't love that he was born in 2004.
Mm.
Like, all right.
Yeah.
It just the pool they're playing in is just so much smaller than a team like the Rockets. You're like, yeah, hey, give us all the size, give us all the athleticism. We'll take it and we'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been able to do that because they were terrible. And the Kings don't have that luxury.
Yeah.
And that's why I think this is so tough. So,
yeah.
It's the Rockets are just I don't want to say they've done it the right way necessarily, because I don't think there's a right way to build a team, but they've done this path that they chose the right way. Does that make sense?
No, it does, because I can tell you the 2017 NBA draft, the Kings had the 5th pick, the 15th pick, the 20th pick, and like the 32nd pick, it didn't work out. And they brought Bogdan Bogdanovic over the same year.
Yeah.
I think two of those players are still in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about 7 years ago. I mean,
it should be in their primes.
Yeah, a lot of guys. The 2018 draft, they missed. Mm-hmm. They missed with Marvin Bagley. You know, they didn't have a pick in 2019. So you're always looking at, like, how did you get here? But the Kings tried this. You know, again, De'Aaron Fox's rookie season, they had 9 players that were first and second year players.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't capture lightning in a bottle like the Rockets have or like OKC did.
Yeah.
And some of that's because you didn't have the number one or number two overall pick and a great draft. Although the Bagley draft, I shouldn't say that they did.
Pretty good draft.
And even the 2017 draft, the 5th pick, they did hit. Mm-hmm. It's just, you got to hit on more than one of them.
Yeah.
And if you're going to build something, you know, there's a big difference between, you know, trading for Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and then drafting Jalen Williams and hitting on, you know, getting a really lucky pick, which had Holmgren. Like, you're able to build your team a different way. Some really good draft picks, mm-hmm. but also go back and look at how many picks the Thunder had over those years.
Yeah.
And how many they missed on.
Yep.
How many guys that just didn't make it in the league and were first round picks that they just jettisoned after 2 years because that's the way they're just cycling through so many first round picks.
They had a lot of darts to throw.
Yeah.
And eventually you're going to hit a bullseye.
That's right.
And that's how the Rockets have done it. Or the Rockets have done it. That's how the Thunder have done it. We'll have injury reports for you. We'll have starting lineups and all of that. Plus keys to victory coming up a little bit later on. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Want to remind you, we've got NBA Cup action for you tonight on ESPN 1320. The Golden State Warriors are taking on the Denver Nuggets. Coverage begins at 6:30 p.m. right here on ESPN 1320. Sacramento Sports. Lead out. All right. You went to practice yesterday.
I did.
Mike Brown absolutely just abusing the media.
Yeah, mostly me. Mostly
we're doing
me.
Jokes, yeah.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah, I like when Mike, when he gets into it and he's trying to explain what it is that they're asking for. Because
So real quick, just to set the scene. Mike Brown at his press scrum yesterday after practice got asked about how the Kings were going about defending the Victor Wembanyama pick and roll, correct?
Yep.
And Mike, instead of just saying like, oh yeah, we got to do better next time, or we got to make some adjustments or watch the film, goes into full coach mode.
Yep. Use me as a crash test dummy.
It's incredible.
Like it makes sense. What he's trying to show you is that like when you're the screener or you're the guy defending the screen, when I go to set a pick on somebody, the defender, if you're defending the guy who's setting the screen, you got to get right up into the yeah. action. Mm-hmm. You can't just let either the guy step back and clear out both players, mm-hmm. be able to screen both players, and then the shooter just steps back and shoots a three mm-hmm. with space. You have to keep manipulating sort of the pick and roll situation, and the Kings didn't do a great job of manipulating it. And it's something that they've been taught forever, you know?
One of the things that keeps jumping out to me is when Mike Brown talked about it after the game, Keegan Murray talked about it after the game, Malik Monk talked about it after the game. We've heard DeMar DeRozan discuss this. I've seen Sack King's film room on Twitter, mm-hmm. had a bunch of video examples of this. It's the communication. How often do we hear the Kings talk about need to communicate, got to communicate better, we just need to communicate better, attention to detail, communication? It, as Mike was going through that yesterday and explaining all the different ways that things went wrong in covering the pick and roll against the Spurs, so much of it came down to just talking
mm-hmm.
and knowing how they're defending on a specific play, because they're doing different things. You know, it's not the exact same thing every time down. You're throwing different pitches. But so many of their issues just came down to, hey, that guy was open because these two players didn't communicate properly, and they both, Wemby rolled, and Domas and Keegan went with him and left whoever wide open up top.
Mm-hmm.
For one example. There's just a million of those. And I don't... It's one of those things that's like easier said than done, I think. Like, I'm just a guy with a microphone. I would love to know why. Like, why don't you just communicate then? Just do it. That seems like a pretty easy thing to do. It's just, hey, we're doing XYZ. Hey, stop the ball. I've got ABC. Like, I don't know why you don't just do it.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
No.
It seems like a pretty simple fix if that's all it is.
Yeah.
Start yapping.
It's very strange why it doesn't happen, why the Kings... they're known as a quiet team, but that doesn't matter. A quiet team, like on the court, you can't be quiet.
I'm sorry. I don't.
You just can't.
That's, you can be quiet off the court for sure, but yeah. That's not an excuse. Like, I don't like public speaking. So you can't call out a screen? Because you don't like to talk in public?
Yeah.
Dog, wrong game. That's insane. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. Like, when in my first, second season, I remember the Kings lost to the Denver Nuggets. And the Nuggets had something like 90 points in the paint. 92 points in the paint.
Mm-hmm.
All they did was score at the rim again and again. They took like a total of 3 jump shots, like outside the paint. Jeez. That they hit. And Paul Westphal was just like, I don't, like, we got destroyed, but... Like, we taught pick and roll defense. It's not like they don't know a defense.
Mm-hmm.
And even like my first year covering this team, they had a whole bunch of centers. They had Samuel Dalembert. They drafted DeMarcus Cousins and Hassan Whiteside.
Mm-hmm.
The only guy that could play pick and roll defense was Darnell Jackson. And everyone's like, who's that? Exactly. He's the only
guy. He played
that,
wide receiver for the 49ers for a year.
Yeah, he's the only guy who understood. He was a 6'9", undersized center. He's the only one that understood how to play pick and roll defense.
That's insane.
And we're talking about Samuel Dalembert, you know, a true shot blocker. So it's one of those things where, like, it doesn't matter how much you coach sometimes. If they're not being physical enough at, which is what Mike was trying to do. He was trying to show how to be physical. And if you're not being physical at the point of attack, that's how you keep getting blown up on pick and rolls. And so I get it. Tough stuff.
Yeah, that's, man. I hated to see you go down like that. That was tough. Yeah, because I think it was Matt George had the video where it was just on you and Mike, and he was also using Deuce and Sean as like a, hey, so when this guy set, when you set a screen and you get taken out by it, what should you do?
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, step back. And then he's the displaying the physicality was like, oh God, Mike, no. Mike Brown wasn't the only person who talked yesterday at Kings practice. DeMar DeRozan and Keegan Murray both had some really interesting things to say. And these two things are semi-related. So we're going to hear from DeMar DeRozan first. And this is DeMar. The line of questioning starts with, you know, how do you help a young player like Keegan Murray? So this soundbite's a couple of minutes, but I think it's all really important. And we'll get into what this all means here. Here's DeMar DeRozan yesterday at Kings practice. Sound courtesy of James Hamm at the Kings Beat.
I mean, it's a daily thing. We're here every day practicing. If it's film, if it's something we see, if we going through walkthrough, if we're shooting, whatever it is, like constant dialogue that you know people don't get to see outside of us just going out and play a game. You know, it's a lot of things that as a collective we tend to try to do for one another. You know, because we all need it. You know, just because one person's struggling, we just don't point to that one person. You know, it's a us thing. You know, so just being confident. You know, reps continue to stay the course and kind of weather this tough time right now. We'd be all right.
You've talked a lot about the mental side of basketball. Just how much is this just like trying to get young players through the mental side?
Yeah, I mean that's the toughest part now. You know, it's so easy to see with. You know, if you play bad, what everybody got to say about it? You know, and I think a lot of people don't put that in consideration in a sense of, you know, everybody kind of, you know, build different, you know. So a lot of times if you're going through something, it could be something outside of basketball that you're dealing with that's affecting basketball, but you're getting talked about what's going on basketball, you know, that could take a toll, you know. So it's definitely tough in so many different ways. Not saying this is going on with anybody specifically, but, you know, it's just tough at times from the mental standpoint to keep yourself up when you got so many people reaching at you about this person saying this writer said this could happen. Sometimes you just got to find a way just to be, you know, tunnel vision and concentrate and pay attention to what matters. So, you know, I can only imagine how tough it is for, you know, young people now. I remember you used to have to buy the newspaper when I first came in the league. So, you know, damn, that sounds old. But, yeah.
But that's – so it's interesting to me that he says, yeah, no, like everybody's kind of built different. Like you don't know what it's like when you're struggling, then you see in the media or you go on social media and you see in your mentions. Like I'm sure – If Keegan Murray's on Twitter or whatever, any struggling player, like I'm sure your mentions are a dumpster fire after you go 0 for 2 from 3.
Oh, two things. Number one, Keegan doesn't do a bunch of social media, but that doesn't mean that his dad doesn't, or his brother, or his girlfriend, or his mom, mm-hmm. and they don't, or his buddies, they don't send him that stuff.
Yeah.
And secondly, like I have people in my mentions. Oh, Kevin Huerter already shut off all of his comments on Instagram and like.
I would
like,
do the exact same thing.
They hear it all.
Yes.
Like, and you guys have, the people out there have to understand, like, they're just normal dudes. Like, Keegan Murray is a totally normal dude.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Huerter, we talk all the time about the New York Giants, mainly to making fun of him.
Mm-hmm.
It just, like, banter in the locker room and stuff. Like, they're just normal people. But just think of the scrutiny that they're under. And when they have a, you know, a bad shooting night and how it can start to weigh on them, that they know when they walk back in the locker room, they're going to see even more of it. And it's going to get even darker
mm-hmm.
stuff.
On top of the scrutiny they put themselves under.
Yeah.
Everybody's your own harshest critic, right?
Yep.
So on top of that, you then go in, dude, when one person says a mean thing about something I wrote, it like sticks with me.
Mm.
It just sits there.
Yeah.
And whether it bothers me or not, or changes the way I do something, not usually, but it just sits there, and I just like it's just in the back of your mind. Can you imagine just every single time you have a little bit of a bad day at your job, it's just hundreds of people letting you know that you had a bad day and that they're not happy about it
and how bad they think you are.
Yeah,
yeah.
Now DeMar says, man, you used to have to buy the newspaper to see that stuff when I came into the league. But now with social media and all this, I can't imagine how hard it is. So Keegan Murray gets asked, hey, how difficult is this? You're struggling right now. How are we feeling? Here's the line of questioning that starts with that. You know, hey, you're struggling. How are you feeling?
I mean, I'm fine. I feel like I'm in a good space. It's just, obviously, things haven't really gone my way this year, but I feel like a lot of guys on our team are in a good space. So just being able to figure out how to win games is our biggest issue right now.
What do you make of your shooting woes? I mean, we've seen you shoot since you came in the league, and you're a really good shooter, but this season, for whatever reason, they're just not falling.
I mean, I'm not worried about it. I mean, obviously, like I said, it hasn't gone my way, but it's a long season, so I'm just staying confident.
Have you ever been through something like this in your basketball career, a slump that goes this long?
Yeah, I mean, my freshman year in college, I shot like 28%, so I've gone through it before, so it's just being able to continue to stay working at it, and things will eventually even out, so it's whatever.
In those moments where you're not knocking out shots, there are some games where it looks like you lose confidence out there. In those moments, like, is that something you're conscious of? Like, what's going through your mind in those moments?
I wouldn't say lose confidence, but I mean, for me, if I feel like if my shot's not falling, I try and figure out how to affect the game in different ways, because there's a lot more to the game than just making shots. So just trying to affect that, and I think if I continue to do that, eventually it'll get me going. So
kind of building off of that, I know Mike encourages you, if it's open, take it no matter what, to live with the miss. But also, I know when you're having a shooting slump, if you're encouraged to try and get to the basket and change things that way. How do you balance, though, when to attack, like you attacked Wemby last night, versus when to let it go?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've done a good job of attacking the rim on occasions this year. So just doing that, I feel like, continues to keep my confidence up. So like I said, I'm not worried about myself. I know I can get through this, and yeah, so.
Well, that's good news. He said all the right things.
He did. And you know what? Like, everything he said.
I mean, I'm
like,
fine.
It was genuine. Like, I didn't feel like he was masking anything. And like,
no.
I mean, there are flames all around him while he's saying it. But, you know, like, yeah. Everything's fine here.
Can I nitpick?
Okay.
He said he shot 28% in college from three.
Yep.
It was 29.6%. He only shot 54 threes that year.
Yeah.
I'm not buying it. Not buying it, Keegan. Not buying it one bit. No, I just he said all the right things for sure. But
I mean, I'm fine.
It's really clear he's not. He's not between the lines. I'm sure he's not sitting there going like, oh my God, I need to change everything.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I as a basketball player? Should I quit? Like, I don't think it's anything like that. But it's really clear when you go from shooting 38% across your first two seasons to 27%.
Oh, yeah.
Through the first 21 games. And he's taking two threes in their last game. It's really clear he doesn't have confidence in his shot right now.
Yeah. It's tough because you see players go through stuff like this all the time, but to see a young player go through it who should be on his way up.
Exactly.
And just so everyone knows, he knows that as well. Mm-hmm. He knows what he's meant, and he knows that if he's not on his way up, what the next thing is going to be, and that's, you know, the rumors. Mm-hmm. Like, is Keegan Murray all of a sudden touchable? Is he not untouchable? How about that? So... Can you go get him from the Kings?
Don't touch other people's privates.
Mm-hmm. You got that. Oh, yeah. Shoot. Hey, we have to go. We'll be back in a second. That's James and Kyle. The 49ers, nightmare season somehow got worse. We'll talk about it next on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.